it's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting radio shows in your theater of the mind. I'm your host, Mark LeVigneur. For this hour of Radio Mystery, we'll be featuring two detective shows. Coming up a little bit later, The Adventures of Michael Shane, but right now it's Raymond Chandler's Philip Marlowe, portrayed by Gerald Moore in the CBS broadcast from February 21st, 1950, an episode called The Ladies' Night.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison, or the grave. This time, a peddler of pulp paper love, a blackmailer with muscles, a south-of-the-border chiseler, a simpering prude, and a corpse in a bedroom, all had one thing in common. Each was a woman. It happened like this.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Ladies' Night.
And the moment the sauce is boiling furiously, which is right now, add one full cup of tomato paste gradually and stir vigorously. Okay? One full cup of tomato paste gradually. Oh, no. No, not now.
I'll be a minute. Yeah, I said I'll be... Oh, no. Ooh! Ow!
All right. So I add tomato paste, cup and all.
Okay, I'm coming. Who is it?
Western Union, telegram for Philip Marlowe.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to... Kay Vanaman.
Yes, darling. Staunch friend, Kay. Am I welcome? Me and my small Western Union Joe?
Oh, sure. Come on in. Come on in, honey. We'll go in the kitchen.
Oh, it's not Marlowe playing chef again. What is it this time?
Well, sauce a la Marino. What's on your poor little rich girl's 14-carat mind tonight?
You. It's Tuesday.
Tuesday?
Yes. This is meeting night in my crowd. The Greens Committee at the Country Club, the Beverly Hills Male Choir, the veterans of this and that. So, no men left.
Oh, except staunch friend Marlowe, huh? Look, Kay, baby, just because I...
I know it by heart, Phil. Just because brave private detective once saved rich Uncle Enoch's niece, Kay, baby, from lots of trouble...
For which he was well paid.
There's no reason why they've got to go on seeing each other. Well, mister, you're wrong. There is a reason, a big, fat one. I like you. Lots.
You do?
Especially on Tuesdays.
I can't tell you how happy that makes me. Now, look...
I'm not being too bold, am I? I did call, you know, three times. You weren't home all day.
That didn't discourage you.
Uh-uh. If I can't have you, I'll take the doorstep.
Tuesdays.
On Tuesday. Now, about this sauce a la whatchamacallit, what do we do first? Fish out the cup or wait for it to melt?
Well, it all depends. If we want to, Hey, that thing sticking out of your pocket, real telegram or prop for gag?
Oh, no prop, real thing.
Oh?
I met the boy in front of your door. Here.
Open it up, will you? My hands are greasy.
So I noticed. Over there, self-reliant. It's called soap and water.
Oh. Well, read it, dear. Straight-like, huh?
Okay, straight-like. Tried to reach you all day. Very important.
Uh-huh.
Meet me at the Tulip Room. Sunset Strip at 8 tonight. We'll pay
Tulip
you
room.
Triple your fee. Time means everything. Gigi Ormsby.
You know her? Give me the towel, will you?
Yeah, I think... Sure, she's the demon editor for Passman House.
Who published what?
Magazines, Torrid Love, Great Passion. You know, the shop girl's encyclopedia.
Uh-huh. Well, now tell me, shop girl, where'd you meet editor G.G. Ormsby?
At a cocktail party about a year ago. She's quite a character. Sleek to look at.
And listen to?
Oh, someplace between a career woman and a marine sergeant.
Credit good?
Excellent. Mm. Uncle Enoch once shook hands with her, and that's better than Dunn and Bradstreet. Hey, where are you going?
The Dunn jacket and professional demeanor. Both are going to the Tulip Room.
Oh, Phil, can
but
I...
you're not.
Phil, that's not fair. This is
and
Tuesday.
And the sauce a la Marino needs one measuring cup removed. A delicate woman's touch from here on in. Bye-bye, Kay. You're a staunch friend indeed. Tulip Room was one of those extra chic spots, you know, curled up at the foot of the Hollywood Hills, where the velvet and the maitre d's tone of voice made you sure you had egg on your vest. But that plus the crew-cut glamour girls who lined the booths and shrilled darling, no matter what was said, made finding my prospective client that much easier. In severely tailored banker's gray flannel, she stood out among the neighboring naked shoulders like a wart on a cue ball, as did her voice, which once it had gone through the introductions, came right to the point.
Marlowe, my problem is simple. I want to find a woman in a hurry. Her name is Henrietta Lawrence. She's a good hack writer who disappeared, I know not why. Health?
Likewise.
Now, here it is. 1, 2, 3. A couple of weeks ago, Henrietta Lawrence showed up in my office from someplace like Seattle or Portland, I forget which, and handed me an outline for a 3-installment serial story that was excellent, according to our standards.
Hmm.
3 days ago, she brought in the first 2 installments, also excellent. But the day before yesterday, when the 3rd installment was due, I was sitting in my office window when this happened. She only got as far as the front door.
What happened?
I don't know. She saw somebody going by slowly in a car. Scared the daylights out of her, and she hobbled for a cab.
Wait a minute. You say hobbled?
Yes, she limps.
Uses
a cane.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she piled into this cab and took off. Haven't had a word from her since. I'm worried, Marlowe. She's a nervous thing, the kind who'd go to pieces, little ones fast. Well, I want you to find this girl. She may be in an awful jam. Now, what do you want to know?
Well, description might help, Gigi.
Okay. Henrietta's about 35, on the drab side. No makeup, no jewelry. Each time I saw her, she was wearing the same thing. A plain brown coat, a plainer brown hat, low heels. All in all, the sex appeal of a tumbleweed.
Mm-hmm. Last address you had on her?
The only one. The Brace Hotel for Women, room 7.
Mm.
It's over on Fountain near La Cienega. But she hasn't checked back there in 2 days, either. The giggling flower of the old South desk clerk I talked to on the phone today hasn't the slightest idea where she is. But I figure for you, she might, Marlowe. She's probably got a face like wet hemp. Her name is Clarice.
Well, we'll try it. Where can I reach you, Gigi?
At my home in Brentwood. Sunnyside 9-1011.
1011?
Yeah, I'll stay next to the phone.
Mm.
Really, do your best, will you, Marlowe?
One moment, please. Go ahead. Oh, hello. Can I help you?
Are we alone? Is the switchboard closed?
Why, yes.
Good. You see, I'm a private detective named Marlowe, Clarice.
A private detective? And you know my name.
Oh, we find things out.
Oh, how can poor little old me help you?
Well, it's about Henrietta Lawrence, the girl with the cane.
Mm-hmm.
She's in trouble, and I think it's a man.
So do I.
Who?
Well, I don't know.
You sure?
Positive. She was always so quiet, so mysterious. It was enough to make a body curious.
Oh.
So one night I followed her. She went to Annie Stringer's Hollywood Health Club. That's a ladies' Turkish bath over on Santa Monica Boulevard in Doheny.
Hmm. Well, maybe she ducked in there because she knew you were following her.
Oh, no, I was very careful. Besides, she had something to say to a woman there. I know, I saw him talking in the doorway when I went by. Couldn't see who it was, though.
No man, huh?
No. But I keep my eyes open when she comes back.
Oh, you do just that. Keep them wide open, Clarice. They're lovely eyes.
Oh.
Good night, honey. My client was wrong. Clarice did not have a face like wet hemp. It was more like a batch of biscuits, but the body curious had provided a lead. As far as the corner of Santa Monica and Doheny, and into the white, antiseptic-looking reception room of Annie Stringer's Hollywood Health Club, women only.
My husband said if I...
There I forgot about Clarice, hemp, and biscuits alike, and thought instead about something a whole lot tastier, like the girl who was leaning on the corner of a desk marked information while she made pencil marks on a chart. She looked up when I closed the door and started toward me. But when another door in the room opened and a woman who was built like a sack of cement bore down on me, she turned back to her chart.
Yes, sir. I help you. I'm Annie Stringer. Annie will do. Name's my stock in trade.
Henrietta Lawrence. I'm looking for her.
Who are you, mister? What's your name?
Philip Marlowe. I'm a friend of Henrietta's from Portland. They told me over at the Brace Hotel that Henrietta might be at your place. You see, someone had seen her come in here once.
Oh, Henrietta Lawrence, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Don't recall anyone by that name, Mr. Marlowe, but you might check with my receptionist there. Take care of the gentleman, will you, Mona, dear?
Very well,
I'm coming, Mrs. Gordon.
I'm sorry, Mr...
Marlowe, Mona, dear. Philip Marlowe.
Marlowe. Well, I don't recall any Henrietta Lawrence ever having been with us, but why don't we check the registration cards at my desk and be sure? I might be mistaken.
All right. She's a woman about 35. She wears no makeup and...
Never mind. Huh? I know her, amigo.
What?
Just listen. You see, Mr. Marlowe, the cards here list everyone who ever visits the club.
Hmm.
Why do you really want Henrietta Lawrence?
Well, I'm a private detective with interested clients.
Who has money, amigo?
It could be. What's your connection here?
Receptionist. Oh. And good friend to Annie. Her competent, you might say.
All right, say it.
Meet me in the alley behind the hardware store across the street in a half hour. We close then. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Marlowe, but we don't seem to have any listing of a Henrietta Lawrence. But perhaps in the
future... No, never mind. Thanks just the same.
Well, you're quite welcome. Don't keep me waiting, amigo.
I killed most of the 30-minute wait at an all-night beanery a block away where I drank bad coffee and listened to a special monologue from a waitress, which was worse. And at exactly 10:30, I stepped into the street and walked to the alley behind the hardware store. Moved cautiously toward the dark shadow of the building until a hand that gripped like a bear trap snapped shut on my upper arm, while another locked my wrist high into my back.
Oh, 1 inch, Mr. Marlowe, and I'll break it off and hand it to you. I was a lady wrestler, understand?
Oh, do I still call you Annie?
Never mind the wisecracks. It's been a long day, and I haven't got patience. Now, what's your angle, flatfoot?
This. Slip, baby, in more ways than one. Start talking.
All right. Henrietta came from Seattle, not Portland.
Let's bluff, Annie. Hot air.
Yeah? I suppose that goes for the letter, too, I suppose.
Letter? You slipped again, kid.
You don't know what letter I'm talking about. Mr. Marlowe, Henrietta Lawrence does. So tell her to call off the bloodhound, or that letter will go right to the cops. They'll know exactly what to do with it.
Get going, sweetie. Oh,
hey.
Roll the top of your head off, go on, feed it, while you can still walk. Go.
All right. Don't forget the message I gave you for Miss Lawrence.
Kay watched Annie Stringer lumber out of sight down the alley. And she turned, tossed me an I told you so smile, and lit a cigarette for me.
Here. Well, I guess it's a good thing I chucked that scullery maid routine and followed you after all, wasn't it?
Look, I've already said thanks, so go ahead. Get real corny. Rub it in. Marlowe pinned by a woman.
That was no woman, Phil. It was the late gargantuous cousin.
Yeah, I was also outnumbered and surrounded. By the way, where's your gun, Kay?
I don't have any gun. Just a lot of bluff and curiosity about what you were doing out here in the alley with a creature like that.
I was taking a judo lesson.
By correspondence, maybe? What was all that about a letter?
Well, for my money, the way things stack up, Gigi Ormsby's top writer, one Henrietta Lawrence, is being blackmailed by Annie Stringer, and that letter is Annie's protection. Goes to the cops if anything. Okay, get out of sight, quick.
What? What's the matter? Marlowe, not another one.
Yeah, yeah, my date, Doc. Will you go on? It's important.
All right, but don't forget you're a sucker for a hammerlock, so watch it. Me? Senor Marlowe?
Over here, Mona.
Who's he? You are here. Are we alone?
Yeah, yeah, we're alone.
Good. It is worth my life what I'm going to tell you. And we like me alive, no?
Look, what is it, Moni? You know something about Henrietta Lawrence?
See, more than enough. There's a certain letter.
Oh, you know about that, huh?
Sure. I know where it is and what it says.
Bless you, baby. Where is it? I want that letter bad.
It's nice.
Nice?
See. And I would love to give it to you for nothing, but...
But what?
But my poor mother, she needs an operation. My father, the mortgage on the ranch.
Your little sister wants music lessons. Come on, kid, how much?
How much is the life of Henrietta Lawrence worth, Phil, dear? To me, to you, to Henrietta Lawrence.
Her life, huh? I'll see what I can do.
You better do real good, amigo. It's a very serious thing. I take a great risk. Annie Stringer is stupid. But she's also strong like a bull. Come to my apartment. 8310 North Ardmore, number D. 1 hour.
D, huh? Okay, I'll be there.
Good. And please, amigo, you don't hold hard feelings against me. Not for this. You know, business is business. Pleasure is pleasure, no? Maybe we can mix them. In an hour. I'll be waiting for you, Phil.
How do you like that?
It was as touching a little scene as I've ever witnessed.
Skip it, Kay. This deal is liable to get rough before it's over, and I've got a call to make. Let's go.
And I was dumb enough to warn you against a hammerlock. The kids that
The hammerlock that that kid holds is like a pat on the head. Can I go with you just for laughs?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to call on my client. You're scramming. Come on. Marlo, Gigi, got a line on Henrietta, but you're not going to like it much.
What do you mean? How does it go, Marlo?
Trouble is, she's got blackmail. I don't know what the hook is, but I have word of one of the bargainers is plenty serious.
Who's doing it, Phil?
A female mastodon named Annie Stringers, the big wheel. I got onto it through a letter.
A letter?
Yeah. Annie wrote a protection letter. It's got all the dirt in it and goes to the cops if anything happens to Annie. It's a standard routine.
Where is this letter? Who has it?
There's a double-crossing little Spanish number named Mona. We're supposed to meet her again in an hour at her place.
Phil, we must get that letter.
Yeah, it's no sense, Gigi. Mona's not bright, but she's sly. It's liable to be expensive.
That doesn't matter.
Okay.
Anything I can do to help Henrietta, I want to do now more than ever.
What does that mean?
I've heard from her, Marlo. She called me just a few minutes ago.
Where was she?
That's the tough part. She was crying. Said it was the end of everything. She tried to tell me about the last installments of the story, then she was interrupted. She gasped out something that sounded like American Airlines ticket office. Then the line went dead. There are three of those offices in town.
Yeah. Well, we better check them. Look, can you take the one out in Beverly Hills? I'll get the others.
All right. And, Marlo, where does this Spanish dame live?
North Ardmore, 8310, apartment D.
I'll meet you there in an hour.
When Gigi hung up, I sent Kay to check the airline office in Hollywood for a woman carrying a cane and a big load of trouble, telling her to call me at the downtown agency within half an hour. Then I headed south for the office on 6th Street. Halfway down, it began to rain. You know the kind of dismal, misty drizzle that makes your clothes smell like blankets at a fire sale? I spent a fruitless half hour peeking into corners and trading descriptions, and finally, when Kay called in a negative report from the Hollywood office, it was high time to beat it out to my appointment with Mona. The rain had put enough dazzling sheen on the pavement to make the going slow and slick. But I got out to 8310 Ardmore not over a minute late. Apartment B was the last on the right and completely dark. As I walked toward it, I found myself following a set of feminine footprints rapidly filling with water. And besides, each left print was a little round hole. By the time that registered on me, I was already at the door and could hear her crying inside. I didn't wait to knock. Mona! Mona, it's me, Marlo. For Pete's sake, what happened to you?
Phil, that woman was here waiting for me in the dark. She had a big club. When I came in, she grabbed me and beat me with it.
Yeah, it was a cane. Not that it makes any difference now. Hey, your apartment's a wreck. She got the letter, huh?
See, she got it, and look. Look at this awful
Later,
black
later.
Fruit.
Right now, I want to know what that letter said. Come on, what's Annie got on Henrietta Lawrence?
Right. Somebody's outside there.
Oh, it's Gigi. Come on in, Gigi.
Hello, Bill.
Henrietta scooped this Gigi. She was here and got the letter herself.
She what?
Yes. We were just talking about the letter when you came in. Now, let's get on with it, Mona. What's Big Annie's pitch?
Supposing I won't tell you now.
Then I'll have you in the pokey for attempted extortion. Come on.
Well, okay.
That's better.
For you and me, go ahead, tell. I don't know what Henrietta Lawrence means to this dragon here, but she's a murderer.
That's impossible. Henrietta's a fine girl.
You know what you're saying, Mona?
Sure I do. I read the letter, didn't I? Henrietta Lawrence killed a woman in Seattle 4 years ago. Annie saw her do it. She had names, dates, places, everything.
I can't believe it. She's such a swell person. She even left this, the final installment of the story for me in that Wilshire ticket office. What'll we do, Phil? We gotta help her.
Okay. Since neither she nor Annie counted on Mona here reading the letter, the best way to help her is to try to keep her from committing another murder.
What, are you crazy? What are you talking about?
Come on, Gigi, get with it. The letter was worthless except as Annie Stringer's protection. Yet Henrietta went to all the trouble of getting it. Why? So she could shut Annie up, and there's only one way to do that.
Kill her. Holy mackerel, I didn't even think.
You should, Senora. You got nothing else to work with. Drop
dead. Stop it, stop it, both of you.
Oh, crazy.
Better stay clear of it from here on, Gigi. Go home and wait for me.
Okay, Phil, whatever you say. Call me as soon as you can.
Sure,
you?
Sure. All right, come on, Mona, let's go.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, no, amigo. The letter's gone, and so is Mona's interest.
You know Annie, so you may be able to help me. It's that or spend the night in a cooler. Add it up, sweetheart. Andale.
All right. You're so forceful, amigo. Come on, let's go.
Well, Annie's not in her apartment, and she's not around the health club. What's next, Mona? Where else would she be?
Search me, amigo.
Think, will you? Has she had any appointments lately that didn't fit with her regular routine?
Well, she went out on Fountain Avenue in a big hurry a couple of
Fountain
days.
Fountain Avenue? That's where Henrietta's been staying, in a hotel out there.
The Brace Hotel?
That's it, on the nose. Come on, Mona. It's here on the first floor.
Hey there. Now, just a moment there. Where do you think you're...
It's you again, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah, it's me again, Clarice.
You're looking for that Miss Lawrence,
yeah.
Number 7?
Uh-huh.
Well, you're sure in luck, Mr. Marlowe. She's in now. She came back about a half hour ago with a friend, the biggest woman I ever saw.
Annie. It's true, amigo, you were right.
Yeah, come on, let's get back there.
Oh, Mr. Marlowe, you can't go back there. You're a man, and this hotel is for women only.
Now, look, sis, you've got a pass key there, haven't you? Come on, this entire night from start to finish has been for women only. Where's number 7?
Phil, this is it, right here.
Henrietta! Unlock it, Clarice, fast. Get back.
Henry! Dead. With a knife.
Go ahead and scream, Clarice. Get it over with.
Oh, well. Where's Miss Lawrence?
She no doubt left by the window here. Only 5 feet to the ground and a clear set of footprints in the wet dirt, cane marks and all, just like...
Just like what, Mr. Marlowe?
I started to say like the ones I saw earlier. Sure, the last installment of the story, the letter at Mona's, the airline ticket. Now she's out of it, slick as a whistle. Clarice, call the cops. Here, give them my card. I'll get in touch.
Well, where are you going, Mr. Marlowe?
To break the unpleasant news as gently as possible to my client.
Phil... What about me? What will I do now?
Just keep looking at Annie, a beautiful, chiseling, double-crossing jerk. Maybe you'll learn something, but I'm not going to count on it. Gigi had a lot of lights on in a glossy Brentwood house. And as I walked up the wet, curving flagstones to a door, I could see her inside, pacing slowly back and forth. An impatient cigarette in one hand, a stiff brace of brandy in the other. Whatever G.G. Ormsby really thought or felt about Henrietta Lawrence then, I couldn't tell. But I was sure that before I left, she was going to despise her.
Phil, I've been waiting for you to phone me. Something bad, isn't it? I can see it in your face.
We found Annie Stringer's body, G.G., in Henrietta's hotel room.
Ah, what a dirty, dirty shame. And Henrietta?
Gone. But she won't get far, not this time. The circle gets smaller every time. She can't keep on killing. It's got to stop someplace.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I'm sorry for her, Phil. I hope she got a plane ticket tonight and is miles away by morning. I hope she gets a break this time.
She didn't buy a ticket. She's not even running. And she won't get that break.
You talk as if you know where she is, do you?
Mm-hmm. You've been to Seattle, haven't you, Gigi?
Well, of course, but not for years.
You lived there. You were a writer before you became a publisher.
Why, what is this?
You knew Annie Stringer long before tonight, too, Gigi, huh?
What are you driving at, Marlowe?
That your real name is Henrietta Lawrence, that you killed a woman in Seattle once, changed your name, and got away, but there was a witness. And a couple of weeks ago, purely by chance, that witness, Annie Stringer, ran into you, recognized you as Henrietta, and grabbed at the chance for blackmail.
Stop it, Marlowe.
So you had to bring Henrietta Lawrence back to life just long enough to get rid of the witness. But first you had to get a letter she'd written and also have someone who tell a straight story to the cops. So you hired me, planted the right leads along the way.
You
get away from that desk. Oh, try it, Gigi. You can't win, so at least lose gracefully, will you?
If this was in one of my books, no one would believe it. You're right, I can't win. It's all true, Phil. Where was the loophole?
It started only as a hunch, but everything fit. I got it from the cane you used, Gigi, at Mona's place. The cane marks were on the left side of your tracks. But outside the hotel window, they were on the right. Anybody who really has to use a cane couldn't do that.
Such a little thing.
As a matter of fact, it was.
You're the only person between me and that break. I got more money than I know what to do with. I can bid high, really high. You wouldn't be for sale, would you?
No, baby. Just for hire. Get your coat, Gigi. We're going down to headquarters. Getting the whole business down on police stationery, one orderly step at a time, is a process as full of, well, as full as the fiscal report of the First National Bank. It took twice as long to whip up. But finally it was all over. I was on my way home to my bachelor apartment. And then, I remembered something.
Never mind explaining what took you so long, darling. You're here now.
Dinner is ready and waiting, and the martinis are ice cold. Just come on in and close the door.
Yeah.
Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, from the Columbia Broadcasting System, heard first on February 21st, 1950. Although Philip Marlowe was introduced to the public by Raymond Chandler in novel form, he actually had nothing to do with the writing of the radio series. That was left up to Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Mark Levone, you're with you for Tuned to Yesterday, and finally, it's The Adventures of Michael Shane. One of the broadcasts from the 1948 through 1950 transcribed run, or recorded ahead of time, Jeff Chandler, our star in this episode, next on Tuned to Yesterday.
Look, doll girl, I've got to know what goes. Last night, someone ran me down. Later on, they killed an old man who tried to tell me something. My nerves are like radar, and they're sending out all kinds of danger signals. I'm on somebody's list. Whose list, doll girl? Come on, give.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. Michael Shane, reckless, red-headed Irishman back in his old haunts in New Orleans, ready as always to risk his neck for law, order, and an occasional dollar. Listen now as we bring you The New Adventures of Michael Shane.
Hello.
Michael Shane, Private Detective.
Speaking.
Mr. Shane, I have a job for you, but I can't pay you very much.
Keep talking, I'm listening.
My name is Marina LaRue. I want you to come over to 1612 Wentworth Street. I meet you on the porch.
On the porch?
Yes, this is why I call you. My father has locked all the doors and windows. He's in the house, sitting in the dark, waiting.
Waiting for what?
For death, Mr. Shane.
I was on my way across New Orleans to see Marina LaRue, whose papa was waiting for death. 1612 Wentworth Street was a couple of minutes by cab in ordinary times, but these were not ordinary times, so it was taking me a half hour to walk it. Yeah, this had been a bad month for little Mike. Police headquarters had suspended my license for 60 days for being a stunk. But even stunks have stomachs and creditors. And that last buck in my wallet was so lonely it was getting psychoneurotic. So, license or no license, I wasn't letting Marina LaRue get away. And just like she said, she was waiting on the porch, and she was some baby doll. Creole from way back and round and ripe like a cantaloupe busting its seams. Only I'd been living on shredded wheat and canned milk for so long, all Marina LaRue meant to me then was ham and eggs and pork chops and maybe pie a la mode.
Mr. Shane.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. I'm half out of my mind. I don't want to call the police if nothing is really wrong.
Hey, slow down. Your father's inside the house?
Yes. He has been in there for the last 8 days, just sitting in his room in the dark. Like I said, waiting for death.
What's the matter? Is he sick?
No. He's as healthy as you or I. That's why I don't understand. Tonight, he won't even let me in the house. He has locked all the doors and the windows. I don't know what to think.
Well, I think we ought to tap a brick against one of those windows and have a talk with Papa.
Yes.
Yeah, but first I ought to tell you that I break windows and talk to Papas who wait for death for something more than the sheer joy of it. For something like 20 bucks a day. You understand that, of course.
I told you I pay you.
Okay. I always like to begin business on a friendly basis. Now, where's that brick? I broke the window, reached in and unlocked it, and then slid over the sill. The house was as black as a mug of G.I. coffee. I found a light switch and clicked it back and forth, but nothing happened. And I let the girl in through the front door. Come on in. What happened to the lights?
I don't know. And where is Papa?
Yeah.
Papa! Papa!
I started lighting matches and we wandered through the house.
Papa, where are you?
The single flare of light cast crazy shadows against the walls and the ceiling.
Papa!
You got the screwy feeling that the house itself was alive and watching you. Except for our footsteps, there wasn't a sound.
Papa, where are you?
Oh, My error. Yeah, yeah, there was a sound, all right, coming from the next room down the hall. I felt a nerve deep down inside me start jangling like a burglar alarm. I knew that sound like I know my heartbeat. We were at the door of the room. I struck another match and the girl saw.
Papa! No. No, Papa! No, Papa!
She was hanging tied to the chandelier. Then suddenly the girl's sobbing ended as though somebody had clamped a hand over her mouth. When she spoke, she sounded like a stranger.
Strike another match. Her lips close to him.
Wasn't one look enough?
Strike a match.
Okay.
His forehead.
Yeah. Funny mark. Looks like a brand or something. A coiled snake.
I should have known. I should have known that's why he was so frightened. That is who he was waiting for. Anthony Kyle.
Hey, kid. Good. Snap out of it. Hey, what's wrong with you? What are you talking about? Who's Carell?
Kyle? I didn't say. Call the police. Tell him my father committed suicide. And then go away.
I did what the lady said. I called the cops, collected my 20 bucks, and beat it. Because if the police found me working without a license, they might send me to bed without supper. With 20 bucks, I was once again a man of distinction. So I took a cab downtown. On the way, I debated whether to sample Antoine's elegant crawfish or Galatoire's savory bouillabaisse. And I settled for Charlie's hash and beer. Charlie was an ancient, moth-eaten character who kept a basement bar on Beale Street just so he'd have somebody to talk to. And there weren't many customers tonight, and he stayed close to me, polishing the mahogany and looking annoyed.
New Orleans. How quaint.
Huh?
Yeah, that's what they said. How quaint.
What are you talking about, Charlie?
Tourists, I'm talking about. Six of them. Came down a while back from Peoria, they said. Just looking, they said. How quaint.
All right,
quaint,
pour me another one, Charlie.
Yeah, okay, Mike. Quaint they think this is. I should have told them how my place used to be. Peoria.
Charlie.
Huh?
Did you ever hear of anyone named Anthony Carell? Charlie, I'm talking to you.
I heard you, Sheen.
Well?
You better stick to looking through hotel transoms and forget Anthony Carell.
Why?
Because it's something out of the past. Something that hasn't got any place in this world.
What are you talking about?
You see, according to the story, there's something special about Anthony Carell.
Special?
Yeah. He ain't like you and me, Shane. You see, Anthony Carell ain't never going to die.
That tickled me. Oh. I finished my drink, waved goodbye to old Charlie, yelled something about getting Carell's formula and putting Peruna out of business, and then I was on my way. The air was better outside, and I decided to walk. It was a nice, quiet street. Great place to start a cemetery. As it turned out, I was just the kid to start one. I didn't hear the car behind me. All I saw was the cab on the next corner. Cab driver was leaning against the open door waiting for me. I stepped off the curb and a couple of headlights...
Hey, look out!
Then I was rolling on cobblestones, watching a red taillight disappear in the distance. Next thing, the cab driver was bending over me.
You okay, Pally?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Hey, take me home, will you?
That sure was close.
No, I just got careless crossing the street.
Careless? I was watching, Pally. That car followed you for maybe two blocks, waiting to get a chance at you.
Huh?
Yeah. Somebody in this town don't like you very much, Pally.
The cabbie drove Pally home. Between my evening of hilarity and my nosedive in the gutter, I felt kind of rocky. As soon as I got in the room, I flopped down in bed and bid the world good night. But the world wasn't finished with me. Yeah. Oh.
Mike, this is Charlie.
Oh, yeah, Charlie.
Listen to me, boy. Something funny's going on.
Yeah, funny.
They're trying to scare me. But old Charlie's been around too long to scare.
Good for old Charlie.
You come on over and I'll tell you what they're up to, boy.
Yeah, sure.
You come on over right away.
Okay.
You know where I bunk? In the room behind the bar. Just knock on the front door. I'll let you in.
Yeah.
Get here quick as you can.
Sure, Charlie.
The last thing I saw before I fell asleep again was the luminous green dial on my bedside clock. 3:47. It said 10:20 when I saw it again. The room was lousy with sunshine. I was brushing my teeth and trying to avoid my reflection in the mirror when I remembered Charlie calling me. I found the phone number of his joint in the book and I called him. Only it wasn't Charlie who answered.
Yeah?
I want to speak to Charlie.
Who is it?
Just let me talk to Charlie.
Sorry, mister. Charlie isn't here.
Well, where is he?
They took him to the morgue an hour ago. He's dead.
Now, back to New Orleans to the new adventures of Michael Shane.
In the beginning, it hadn't made much sense. Marina LaRue calling me to break into her father's house. Him hanging from the chandelier with a snake brand on his forehead. And now old Charlie dead. Well, I went down to the morgue. The attendant took me to the basement where Charlie was on a table. Lieutenant Burns of headquarters was just taking a peek.
Nasty, a redhead.
Yeah. What's that on his forehead? Looks like a brand. Like a coiled snake.
I probably banged his head. It's nothing.
Well, you want to bet, Lieutenant?
Say, look, Shane, what are you doing around here? You're not forgetting that your license is suspended.
Oh, a guy can get in here without a license. Look at Charlie. All he had was a license to sell bad booze.
You're not doing any work for anybody?
No. Nah, just keeping in training.
Come on, be a good boy, Redhead. You've only got a couple of weeks to go. Then it'll be legal for you to start bothering us.
Burns, tell me about Anthony Correll.
Who?
Sometimes called the deathless one.
Oh, my back. Don't tell me that's going around again.
Well, what about him?
Ah, that's what I love about this town. No matter how modern it may look on the outside, underneath it's still a jungle. Still dancing the voodoo drums.
Voodoo?
Yeah, every so often some scared sucker comes in and whispers in our ears that Anthony Correll is still alive and terrifying the countryside. When we ask him for one teeny little bit of proof, the little sucker vanishes in a puff of smoke. Anthony Correll. Oh, Redhead, you can do better than that.
Yeah, when I got outside on Jackson Street, it did seem kind of silly. But what was so silly about that car trying to run me down last night? What was so silly about Charlie under a white sheet in the basement of that morgue? Oh, I had enough questions in my head to start a quiz show, but not enough answers to win a yo-yo. I knew a good place to ask questions, though. And I had to start asking questions fast. Something was happening, something big, and it was happening to me. I took a cab out to the brownstone house on Wentworth Street where all this began. Come on, you're going to have to open up sometime, baby doll. Ah.
Please, go away, Mr. Shane.
In a little while, Marina, honey.
Please, I'm in mourning. Have some respect.
Sure, I'll take off my hat. Inside.
What do you want?
Why are you so scared?
I'm not scared.
Tell that to the little nerve in your cheek. It's twitching overtime. Look, I want to know about Anthony Correll.
No, please, no.
Yes, please, yes.
Mr. Shane, I was rather glad when I saw you coming up the stairs.
Yeah?
Yes, really I was. I've had trouble forgetting you, Michael.
Uh-uh, dog girl, turn off the warm water. I'd love to, but I can't. How about Anthony Correll?
Why do you bother with something that does not concern you?
That's just it, doll girl. It concerns me clear up to here. Last night, somebody tried to run me down. Later on, they killed an old man who wanted to tell me something. Look, I've been in this business a long time. My nerves are like radar, and they're sending out all kinds of danger signals. I'm on somebody's list. Oh, I'm not one of those storybook detectives, doll girl. I've got to know what I'm fighting.
I cannot help you.
You've got to.
No.
Okay. Mind if I use the phone?
Who are you calling?
The Daily Bulletin. I got a pal working in the city room. I'm going to tell him Marina LaRue of 1612 Wentworth Street says Anthony Correll was responsible for the death of her father.
Grant.
Bulletin, let me speak to Frazier in the city room.
You give me the phone?
No.
No, you can't do this. They kill me.
I'm fighting for my own neck, honey. Hello. Hello, Frazier. This is Mike Shane.
Please.
Yeah, I think I got a story for you.
I tell you what, tell you.
Goodbye, Frazier. Okay, doggo.
give.
Yes, I tell you. And you go out, try to do something about it, the way men have done for 100 years. And if they find you at all, they find branded into your flesh the coiled snake, the mark of Anthony Carell, just as they have found it on all the other.
Who is this guy, Anthony Carell?
You have heard of Madame Lorette?
Madame Lorette? Sure, wasn't she supposed to be some kind of big shot in the voodoo racket around New Orleans?
She was the voodoo queen more than a century ago.
Yeah?
In the 1820s, she married another voodoo worshiper, a man already old, who'd come to New Orleans from Haiti. He was the greatest of them all. His name was Anthony Carell.
And this guy who's causing all the trouble today, he's his descendant, huh?
Descendant, you fool, don't you understand? It is the same man.
But that couldn't be.
Why do you think we are all in such terror of him? He cannot die. Do you know what that means?
Hey, take it.
He cannot die. His food has been poisoned. Cars he was riding in have been shot at. Once the house he was staying in was dynamited. Men stood at every door with guns. But in less than a week, the plotters were dying one by one. And on their foreheads, the snake brand of Anthony Carell.
That's crazy.
That is the story, Mr. Shane. Believe it. Don't believe it as you wish.
What does this big shot look like?
No living man has ever seen his face. There are no pictures.
And who takes care of him?
The Carell clan, one generation after another. Today, there are only two left. Juan, Philippe. They do Anthony Carell's work. Collect his tribute.
Juan and Philippe. Where do they live?
I don't know. I don't know. I've told you everything I know. What else do you want, Mr. Shade? What else do you want?
What else do I want? A little while ago, you said you had trouble forgetting me.
Well?
Come here, doll girl. I don't want you to forget. After I left Marina, I went to the library and spent half the day looking up the old history books of New Orleans. Madame Lorette and Anthony Carell were in every one, and every book agreed that Madame had died in 1845. There was no mention of Anthony Carell ever having died at all. I called an old guy I knew over at the Bureau of Records. I told him I was looking for the death certificate of one Anthony Carell. He laughed over the phone, asked me if I was falling for that old story. But 3 hours later, he called me back. Yeah?
Shane, this is the Bureau of Records.
Well?
You were right. There is no death certificate for Anthony Carell.
I ate a couple of drinks after that. Then I started walking the streets. My head throbbed. Felt like a guy trapped in a nightmare, trying with all his might to wake up out of it. Around midnight, I found a small park near Jackson Square and sat down on a bench trying to think of an answer.
May I sit down, Mr. Shane?
Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. Hey, how come you know my name?
Oh, you are a very famous man, Mr. Shane. Known particularly for your tenacity. Cigarette?
Thanks. Well, what do you want?
Mr. Shane, it's very unfortunate that you saw fit to interest yourself in Anthony Carell.
Oh? Why?
Because now I must kill you.
I felt the bullet smash against me. But at first it was so little pain, that same crazy feeling of maybe it's a dream came back. I lunged for the guy, trying to get hold of his gun hand. Like wrestling with an octopus. He was soft and wet-skinned and a neat little fella. He even wore cologne. It was slipping out of my reach. I jumped up and started running. I said the first prayer that came to my mind. I saw a row of shrubbery. I dived in. And that bullet had been real, all right. My side was beginning to ache like a whole mouthful of sore teeth. My friend with the gun came so close to the brush, I could smell his sweet, stinking cologne. I remembered a couple of other prayers. Something must have worked. A siren started sobbing the blues far off, and the guy beat it. He climbed into a little black coupe parked at the curb. Pulled away, but he was playing it very safe. There was a long stoplight at the corner, and he waited for every second of it. A nice, law-abiding, perfumed young man. There was a parking lot half a block down the street. I ran for it. And as I ducked in, I saw the light on the corner change. The black coupe got down Canal Street. I hopped into the first car and turned on the ignition. A sleepy-eyed attendant came out of a little shed, and I kicked the starter.
I got the ticket, mister! Hey, come back!
I wasn't so law-abiding. I went down side streets like somebody lit a fuse. Yeah, just like in the movies, except my side hurt, my shirt felt sticky and warm, and sick to my stomach. When I was sure no cops were following me, I cut back to Canal Street, and pretty soon I saw the black coupe again, still obeying all the laws. Now we're on the outskirts of town, along the wharves that reached out into the Gulf. The
Black coupe picked up speed. I picked up speed. Oh, it was a long ride. It's a little country road that stretched through the bayous. Once, I managed to slip my hand into my shirt and made the happy discovery my wound felt a lot worse than it really was. Yeah, and I had another good break. In the dashboard compartment, I found a pint of bourbon that had hardly been touched. Oh, I touched it good. It was almost as fine as a blood transfusion. And then before I knew it, the black coupe had turned into a driveway. I went on a few hundred yards, pulled up under some trees, and turned the lights off. It was a battered, weather-beaten farmhouse, standing all by itself in the middle of nothing. The windows were boarded up. Everything about it said nobody home except the black coupe. I snuck around the back. Screen door was open. I walked across a porch and almost knocked over a row of milk bottles. I tried the back door. Door was open. Oh, no, I wasn't having any. You didn't have to be a quiz kid to know what this setup was. I started back across the porch. I reached the screen door and then I stopped. The only sound in all the world was a mosquito buzzing like mad in the darkness. Hey, Shane, where are you going? I realized I'd said that out loud. I kind of giggled to myself. I rubbed my head. It was hot. A bullet hole. Maybe I was already getting delirious. Yeah. But where was I going? Back to little New Orleans? For what? The cops wouldn't listen to me. To them, I was just a big-nosed redhead out for a quick buck. And my sweet-smelling friend had slipped up twice now. If I went back to town, he'd come after me again, and he was just about due for the jackpot. No. Well, there was no place to go except inside the house. I picked up one of the milk bottles. Me and my homogenized blackjack. I went back to the door. Pushed it open. Went into the kitchen. Everything dark. I could just make out some dishes on the sink. The place smelled of bad, greasy cooking. Then I found another door. Now I was in a short hallway that led to a flight of stairs. Not a sound at all. Oh, I'd even been glad to hear that mosquito. Stairs. Started up a step at a time. Slow. Easy. Slow. Easy. And when I was close to the top, there was something about the darkness that looked wrong. Real close to me, I smelled sweet cologne. I spun around and started down the stairs fast, but it was all wasted. At the foot of the stairs, a cigarette glowed in the dark. I was boxed in real nice. The guy downstairs spoke first.
So this is Mr. Shane Juan. Yes, this is him, Philippe.
Juan and Philippe. The brothers Carell. And where is old man Anthony?
You have come for Anthony. Well, he is in the last room at the end of the hall, but I don't think you will reach him. I think you are going to die on those stairs. Keep coming up the steps, Mr. Shane.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. How's it?
Oh, look out!
I lunged at him. There was a swirl of cologne. I brought the milk bottle down hard. Juan crumpled on the floor, nice as you please. Behind me, I heard Philippe coming up after me. I raced down the hall. I tried the first door. Yeah, locked. The second door. Oh, locked. The third door was unlocked. I opened it and slammed it shut behind me. I snapped the lock. Oh, friend Philippe was at the door breaking through. Chair and smashed it through the window. And then I ducked into a corner as the door flung open. Philippe came into the room holding his gun. He headed straight for the broken window. He stood looking out of it into the darkness for a long time.
Won't get away, Mr. Shane.
And his back was to me. I started for him. My side was throbbing again. My throat was so dry you could have struck matches on it. Something must have warned Philippe. He started turning around. I brought the milk bottle down hard. Staggered, fell to his knees. Got up, I started clawing at my legs. I went into a deep purple fog. When I came out of it, Philippe was very quiet. The milk bottle was broken into a thousand pieces. I sat down on a chair. I felt about as peppy as a Floridora girl. And then I remembered. Anthony Carell, the man who couldn't die, was down the hall. I went over to Philippe and dug around until I found his gun. He groaned a little bit, but that's all. I went back out into the hall. The last room at the end of the hall. I started toward it. Then in front of the door, I saw Juan.
I will not let you in this room.
He wasn't able to stand up. He was on his knees in front of the door, and his mouth hung open as though he didn't have the strength to close it.
For five generations, he has been our strength.
With him, we've been able to rule everyone. I will not let you destroy him.
Then I saw the gun in his hand. I saw him try to raise it. I shot three times. He collapsed in a heap. Even while dying, he wasn't going to let me into that room. As I reached for the knob, with his last strength, Juan flung his arm up and wildly tried to block me. What was there in that room that a guy would die like this just to protect? I reached for the knob, raised my gun. I entered the room, slowly, looked around. Then I realized why Juan and Felipe had tried so hard to keep me out of here. Then I realized why Anthony Carell would not die, why he could not be killed. There was no Anthony Carell. The room was empty. Yeah, that was the story of Anthony Carell. He'd lived and died in his own time just as any man. But the Carell clan, knowing the power of fear, had made it appear that the old man was still alive and kicking. Oh, I wonder how many people go through life being afraid of empty rooms. Well, as soon as I got back to town that night, I went to the emergency hospital and had myself pasted together. Then I called on Marina LaRue. I told her all about Anthony Carell. When I finished, she didn't say a word. Just came over and looked at me a long time, and she kissed me. After a while, I began to realize that trip to the hospital was wasted. Marina was so much better than penicillin.
Film and radio actor Jeff Chandler, starring as Michael Shane from the late 1940s. And that wraps up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. It's been a pleasure.